just a small ding near her desk, so I stand up and say, "Well, it's been fun, Flew. Thanks for the chat." I don't even wait to shake her hand or listen to her goodbyes. I go for the door, and 10 seconds later, I'm back in the safety of my car. Alone. It takes me 10 minutes to start it up, and then another 5 to wipe that whole therapy session back there from my memory. Ford, I decide. I'm gonna think about Ford. I really need that guy's real name if I'm gonna use him as my escape fantasy, but I'll probably never see him again. I did blow him off last weekend. And then I laugh. Blow him. I think I'll call him Lumberjack in my fantasy from now on. So I do. I picture me and Lumberjack fucking outside in the alley like we did last weekend. In fact, I think I'll pretend this is a weekly thing we do. You know, to keep the relationship fresh. I like that. It's enough for me. Fantasy men come with no expectations at all. No commitment. No risk of failure. Lumberjack man is a win if ever there was one. And I could use a win. I could really, really use a win.
Chapter 13. Tyler. Kids can be so cute. Especially on Halloween. Probably because they're all hopped up on sugar. Watching little Spider-Mans. Spider-Man? Chase ghosts and shit and pretend to catch them in webs is hilarious. Watching their parents try to maintain control over them is even funnier. I'm kind of enjoying seeing them tear all over the firehouse slash haunted house slash carnival situation wreaking havoc until 2 things strike me. One, I wonder what the hell happens if an actual call comes in. The engine is decked out like a hearse, which can't be the kind of thing you want to see charging toward you if your house is on fire. And 2, these kids remind me of me and Evan and Scotty at that age. And just as I'm about to drop down heavy into a deep pit of memory, Dean comes over to me. He's wearing a long black leather overcoat on top of a black turtleneck with gold chains and leather pants with these funky-looking platform shoes. "Well, hello there. And you are..." "Shaft, baby. I'm a bad mother..." "Shut your mouth," I say. Dean seems pleased that I'm just cool enough to know the lyrics to the Shaft theme song, and he slaps me some skin. I'm hip as shit. Everybody says so. "That's it, my brother," he says. What exactly are you supposed to be?" I glance down at myself. I'm wearing my usual boots, my usual jeans, but I'm wearing a plaid flannel shirt instead of my usual t-shirt. "Dude, you can't tell?" I ask. "I don't know, man. You look kinda like this rich motherfucker I know named Tyler, but that cat never wears a shirt with buttons." "Too much effort," he says. Dean smiles a magnetic smile. "Nah, for real, man, what you supposed to be?" "I'm Paul Bunyan." "Paul Bunyan the lumberjack?" he asks. "The same. Just a bad axe-swinging motherfucker. Can you dig it?" "You know I can," he says. Slaps me more skin. "Seriously, I'm hip as all giddy-up." And then heads over to stop a couple of little witches from fucking with Gladys the French Bulldog, who is wearing a tiny beret and a Picasso shirt. "Yo!" he shouts. "She can't have chocolate! She's a dog, baby!" I look around. I see Bear and Rod dressed like Penn and Teller, which would be kind of an oblique costume choice most other places, but this is Vegas. The irony is that Rod's playing Teller, the one who doesn't talk, and if there's one guy on the planet who cannot shut the fuck up, it's Rod. Alex, true to his love of cooking, is dressed like Guy Fieri. Blonde-tipped wig. I hope it's a wig. And everything. He's got 2 little rugrats hanging on his arms, 1 on each, and he's doing bicep curls with them. Damn, man. If I live to be 50, I hope I stay in good enough shape to do shit like that. If. Even new guy Brandon is here, which surprises me. Being new to the company and being as quiet and creepy as he is, I figured he'd spend Halloween at home sharpening his knife collection or whatever, but Then again, Evan did tell me that story about him saving those kittens, so nothing should be surprising about this guy. Not even the fact that he's dressed like David Bowie circa the Major Tom era. Body paint, face paint, copper-colored hair, the whole nine. I'm getting more and more curious about him, so I approach him as he's ladling some punch into a red plastic cup. I feel like there's a lot more to know about this fella, and I aims to find out what it is. When I go into investigation mode, I like to talk to myself like an old-timey detective from the movies. I saunter up, casually, grabbing a cup for myself. "How's it going, man?" I ask, super pleasant. I'm pleasant as fuck when I want to be. Everybody says so. Brandon just stares at me. For a long time. Like, a really long time. He stops ladling and just stares at me. And then, after what feels like a month, he says, "Good." And then he turns and walks away. Okay, nice. Feels like we're really taking our relationship to the next level. To be continued, Brandon, to be continued. I've got your number, pal. And over there is Babyface Jeff, in a full-on Captain America costume. Because of course he is. Of course he is. Because he really is just like Scotty. It's so obvious. He's got something he's trying to prove to someone. And it breaks my heart to watch him. Even though he's laughing and having fun and playing with the kids, or maybe owing to the fact that he is, it breaks my tiny knotted heart. And I'm trying. I really am. Everyone's having fun and acting silly, and I'm trying to just be here and be present like Dr. Eldridge encouraged me to be, and not think about Scotty or Scarlet or the dream or my mom or my dad or trick-or-treat. A tiny voice interrupts my self-struggle. I look down, and standing just below waist height, I see a tiny dude dressed like Charlie Chaplin from The Tramp, little bowler hat and everything. Okay, trick, I hit back at him. He stares at me with a confused look that makes his stick-on mustache crinkle. I try to explain. See, you say trick or treat, and then I either give you a treat or you give me a trick, so I'm curious to see what the trick is. You got one? His little face scrunches tighter. No, it's just a thing you say. Can I have some candy now? I laugh. I like this kid. I don't have any on me, man, but there's a bunch of candy on that table over there. I point at a giant pile of individually wrapped candy bars and stuff on a nearby table. Jesus. Feels like they could have gone out and gotten some better options for growing bodies. But if it was just a bunch of apples and shit, no one would show up. The whole point of having this thing is to provide parents who want it a safer alternative than door-to-door trick-or-treating. Because, you know, the world is a shitty place, and evil people do evil shit all the time. And all the proceeds from the carnival go to the Boys and Girls Club so that kids also have a safe place to go hang out after school if their parents aren't home or can't afford nannies or whatever, because, again, evil and shitty are we. Chaplin's tugging on my shirt tail now, saying something else. I must have drifted away again for a sec. Sorry, what, man? I ask. I said, are you a fireman? He says. He rubs a runny nose with the back of his sleeve and knocks his mustache askew. This little fucker's so goddamn adorable, I just want to eat his stupid face. Not literally. That'd be fucked up. No, dude, I'm not a fireman, I say. What do? He asks. I don't really have a good answer for this. At least not one appropriate to share with a child. The honest answer, of course, is drugs, booze, and from time to time I fuck strippers in alleys and stuff. But I'm not sure that the truth would go over well in this instance. So I start fumfering. I kind of... He's a superhero. Evan's voice comes from behind me. Evan comes strolling over now. He's dressed in a tuxedo because this year he's decided to be Jay Gatsby, which I don't think is totally fair because he's already basically Jay Gatsby all the time anyway, and also because I think it's just an excuse to wear a tuxedo. You know, how sorority girls use Halloween as an excuse to dress like whores and get away with it? That's Evan in the tuxedo. He'd probably wear the shit every day he's not at work if he could. It's too bad he didn't live in Vegas in the 60s. Guy missed his time. Anyway, he comes sauntering over with a curious little smile on his face. Baby Chaplin does not seem satisfied. "He's not a superhero," he says. "Sure he is," says Evan. "You don't recognize him?" Kid eyes me closely. "I don't know a superhero with a beard." "That's because he's in disguise," Evan whispers. And hell, at this point, I'm just as curious to find out who I am as Chaplin is. Evan leans down low so that he's on Chaplin's level. I lean down too. Evan whispers even more secretively. "He's the Dark Knight." Chaplin's brows knit together tightly. He steps back. I stand up, try to look super heroic-ish. "Yeah," I say. "You know, like in the movie. When the Dark Knight comes back from exile and he's all dirty and homeless-looking. That's me, kid." I wink at Evan, who shakes his head a little and smiles. Chaplin takes me in for a good long beat. Then he says, "I didn't see that movie." "No?" I say. "Well, then you don't know that it's not true." I strike a pose. Evan puts his arm on my shoulder. I wish I had a picture of this moment, quite frankly. Chaplin looks us both up and down and then finally exhales. "You guys are weird." And he heads off to see Captain America, who is handing out the candy. I decide not to contemplate too deeply the implications of Captain America serving as essentially a high-fructose drug dealer. "Kid's not wrong," Evan says. "You are weird." "No, he's not wrong," I say, unable to mask my forlorn tone. Evan takes note. "You doing okay?" I nod. "I'm really glad you came, man. I think it's important." I nod again. "What's going on with that girl, by the way? The pole artisan." "Thanks, Evan." "I was only half joking. You should have asked her to come with."
"I did."
"You did? When? You didn't tell me that."
"Last week," I say. "I beat up these two guys who were chasing her with a gun, and then we fucked in an alley, and I asked her then, but she kind of said no."
"Oh. Okay." Evan pauses.
"Dude, man, I don't want to talk about it, okay?" I cut him off.
"Yeah, okay. That's fine. Hey, we're going to put Bear in the dunk tank. You feel like you want to..." I cut him off again.
"No, man, I think I'm just going to go."
"Really?
No, dude, just, you know, hang here for a while longer."
"Nah, bro," I manage back. Suddenly, I have hit a huge fucking wall. Or it has hit me. Hard to tell which. "I think I just need to go home."
"You want me to come with you? Or you want to come over? Robert's just there alone handing out his homemade granola bars. We can watch him and laugh at the kids' reactions."
"That actually sounds kind of hilarious, but no. No, I'm good. I just want to go to bed." He eyes me skeptically.
"Seriously, dude," I say. "I'm okay, really. I'll be fine."
"Joy cometh with the morning, right?"
"What?
What is that?" he asks.
"I'm not sure. Think it's from the Bible."
"I've told you about Nadir."
"Which one's Nadir?"
"The Farsi translator, the genius one, the engineering degree, the guy who helped me create the specs for the bomb-defusing robot."
"Oh. Yeah, I remember," Evan says stoically.
"Yeah. I ever tell you what Nadir had planned to do with his share of the money when we sold the thing?" Evan shakes his head no. "He was going to use it to build schools for girls and build freshwater centers and rebuild bomb buildings and shit. And every time he would talk about it, I would be like, dude, just take whatever we get for this thing and get the fuck out of here. Move to Switzerland, wherever, and just fucking, you know, roll like a pimp." I take a second, remembering, then start again. And he would always laugh and say, "Oh, Tyler, I cannot. It is all of our responsibility to make our corner of this great wide earth just a little better." And then when I would say, "Dude, look around. Bro, it ain't gonna get better anytime soon," he would just smile and say, "Perhaps, perhaps not. But how will I know if I do not wake up each day and try? Joy cometh with the morning." Evan lets out a breath. "So shit, man, who knows? Maybe tomorrow's the morning that finally cometh with the fucking joy. Or something. I don't know. I'm saying I just want to go to bed and I'll call you in the AM, cool?" Black eyes look into my black soul. "Yeah, dude, that's cool. Just get home safe, okay?" "Aw, man. Ain't nothing gonna happen to me. The Dark Knight don't die." I wink at him. He nods back. Then he takes me by the shoulders and says, "Tyler, you're one of the best people I've ever known." I'm a little stunned by this. Check that. A lot stunned. You work with guys who risk their lives for other people like every day, I say. "I know," he says. "So trust that I know what I'm talking about." Then he pulls me in, gives me a hug, a kiss on the cheek, and pulls back and says, "I'll talk to you tomorrow, okay? Peace, bro." He winks and we slap palms. And then he turns and heads back toward the brightly lit frivolity inside the firehouse. And I turn the other way and start off. But I'm not heading home. I'm not. I lied. I'm sorry, Evan. But if I go home, I'll just think about all the things I don't want to be thinking about. Because I don't know how not to. Except that's not true. I do know how not to. I know that there's one guaranteed way I can stop thinking things I don't want to think. I can forget myself inside someone else. I can find someone. Any random, equally lonely and desperate someone. Another empty vessel who needs to be filled. She can fill me with diversion and I can fill her with me. And that won't fix anything, and I know that. But it will be something. It'll make the thoughts and sounds and tumult stop for the time that it does. And then maybe, just maybe, I can hope against hope that joy just might come with the morning. It may not. But for now, the darkness rules. And so off I go to embrace it. A dark fucking night, making his way alone out into a dark fucking night.
Chapter 14. Maddie. Last night at work felt like a welcome relief, which scares me, freaks me out. When did Pete's turn into a sanctuary from my real life? But it was a good night, as far as Friday night stripping goes, and I made a little over $1,000 in lap dances. I think it's because I'm getting the hang of this stuff, the whole fantasy thing. I think it's because I've kinda succumbed to my own fantasy life. Lumberjack didn't show up last night. Not that I expected him to after the way I walked off last weekend, but I had hoped he might. I get in the shower to get ready for work and make the water hot. So hot the room fills with steam, and when I get out and wipe the mirror clean, my skin is flushed red. I look at my face, my eyes, my hair, that looks almost black when it's wet, and imagine what it felt like when my brother died. "Just make it through tonight, Scarlett," I tell the stranger in the mirror. Which isn't even rational because tomorrow won't be the end of anything. It's a new beginning, actually. Day one of the countdown to the next anniversary, that's all. But I can't think about tomorrow when I still have to get through now. Get ready, go to work, take my clothes off like I'm making toast, collect my money, pay my debts, go home, scald myself in the shower, look in the mirror, and wonder, what's the fucking point? What is the fucking point? You go on, Scarlet, the little angel says, one foot in front of the other. You could always give up, Maddie, the devil offers. Just like that. You could always give up. If I knew what giving up actually meant, maybe I could. What is the definition of giving up? That's my problem. I don't know. I'm the mountain climber scaling Everest. I only know how to do one thing. Inch my way up towards that elusive peak. You should come with us, Annie says as I walk out into the living room. She's bustling around the kitchen, whipping up something quick for dinner before she and the other girls get ready for their Halloween job. It's not one client, it's like a whole party. Normally, I'd feel revulsion at the offer. I mean, how many men will they sleep with tonight? 4, 10, more? But I think I'm numb to this world now. I'm not even shocked. A year ago, I'd be putting all kinds of labels on them. Slut, whore, desperate, sad. Not anymore. Tonight is the moment when all things I've done come crashing into some kind of incoherent mess. Like rain falling for so long it gathers into a puddle, then a trickle down a hill, until it collects into a pond that becomes a lake and then an ocean. I am an ocean of what? Of nothingness, I think. Maddie? Hmm? I say, dragging my thoughts out of my own despair and back to Annie. You want to come with us? It's classy. I raise an eyebrow at her. Classy? I know, Annie sighs. But it is. It's a private club just off the strip. I already have a date like that lined up. Thanks. No, Annie says. You're going to work at a shitty strip bar. This is a club, Maddie. High-end people with money to burn tonight. All you gotta do is show up in a costume and I'll tell Kimberly. Jesus fuck, Annie, I say. I'm not whoring for Kimberly. She scowls at me, offended. Whatever. Go wallow in your pity then. Fuck if I care. She grabs her sandwich and leaves to eat in her room. She's just trying to help, Diane says behind me. I didn't even know she was there. She sits on the sofa. You don't remember me from freshman year, do you? I try to think back to any memory of Diane before junior year economics class. I can't place her, but in my defense, I was a wreck. I was sitting right behind you in freshman English when you got the message. That day comes back to me like an unwelcome hallucinogenic flashback. The banging of the doors at the top of the auditorium-like classroom, the tentative footsteps on the stairs as they came towards me. I was taking a test, totally lost in my persuasive essay on the merits of ethics and scientific research. The messenger had long blonde hair. It brushed against my arm as she leaned in to whisper in my ear. She was my roommate. Kate, her name was. And she said, "You need to call home." That's it. That's all she said. The whole class stopped to look at me. The professor, some young adjunct faculty woman, whose name I couldn't tell you now if I had $1 million writing on it, said, "Is there a problem?" And Kate said, "Yes," in this soft, sad voice. "Yes," she repeated. "There's a problem and Maddie has to leave and call home." "You lost so much weight that year," Diane says, pulling me into the present. "Just, like, overnight. You left that day, looking a little shell-shocked, and then you came back 2 weeks later and you were a wraith. That's the word I thought in my head when you sat in front of me the next time I saw you. A wraith." I just stare at Diane, unable to process anything but the memory of what came next. "You might not think we give a shit, Madison, but we do." Diane sighs, kinda loud, and then she shrugs like she did her best and that's all she's got for me. "So, go to work tonight, or show up with us tonight, or drink yourself stupid and fuck a guy for free, whatever it takes to get to tomorrow, right? I get it." I nod, feeling like I'm back in Plu's office the other day, incapable of anything other than a nod. But if you want to be around friends tonight, then we'll be at Cabaret Royale. I'll put your name on the guest list. She leaves as quietly as she appeared. I force myself to get up and get ready for work. I'm going in early, I decide. Fuck it. If this is my job now, might as well do it right. I pack up several outfits. The pink one, the blue one, and the white one. We're supposed to wear costumes, but before this moment I was old Maddie, and I didn't pick one up. Maybe I thought I'd get out of this day. Maybe I thought I could stop it from coming. Maybe I thought I'd give up before it got here. I kinda think these same things every year. Halloween always comes, but there's a first time for everything. I still have the damn angel wings and halo, so I stuff those into my bag as well. They're looking a little ratty, and I really need new ones if I'm going to keep this whole girl-next-door persona going at Pete's. But I don't think I need a new angel costume. I'm tired of pretending I'm good. I think tomorrow I'm gonna go buy a little devil outfit instead. Embrace the woman I really am. Dark and slutty and dirty. I go outside, get in my car, drive to work like I'm making toast. And when I get there, I park, get out, grab my bag, and square my shoulders as I go inside. Raven's mouth almost drops open when I show up an hour early. "Well, well, well," she says, "look who's motivated tonight." I don't say a word, just drag myself back to the dressing room and start putting on my wig and the white negligee. One last time, for old time's sake. There are a fuck ton of other girls in here who normally work during the week because they have kids or men or whatever. I don't recognize a single face or the name to put to it. So I grab one of the vanities as a girl gets up to go out on the floor and settle down to put my makeup on. "What's going on?" Raven asks behind me. I meet her eyes in the mirror, but only for a second. To my surprise, she pulls up a chair and scoots over to me. "Scarlett," she prods. "What? What are you doing?" "Getting ready for work. Why else would I be here?" "You're not on the schedule," she says. "What?" "It's Halloween, honey," one of the no-names says. "Holiday shifts go by seniority, and you're the new girl." "Are you serious?" I ask Raven. "You might want to start paying attention. I post the schedule every Friday morning, you know. But I always work Saturdays. I just assumed..." "Do you need the money?" she asks. And to my surprise, there's no bitter rivalry in her tone. "The stage fee tonight is double." "Double? Shit. That's almost $800. "You don't look too good," Raven says. "Are you sick?" "No," I say, gently patting the dark circles under my eyes. "I mean, I can give you a slot if you need it and think you can make your money back," Raven says. But you sure don't look like you're up to this." For a few moments, I just sit there and stare at the stranger in the mirror. I feel lost all of a sudden. I've been working here almost 4 months now, and every weekend I've had somewhere to go. Pete's was never my first choice, but it was somewhere to go. Somewhere I could forget about my life and just make some fucking toast. I turn to look Raven in the eyes instead of her reflection. "Where would I go?" She smiles and lets out a small laugh. "I don't know. On a date? To a party?" She shrugs. "Drinks with friends?" I turn back to the mirror, unable to move. "Look," she says, a hand resting tentatively on my shoulder. "You can work the floor if you want. Hang out a little and just serve drinks. That way you only have to pay on your tips. But if I were you, Scarlett, I'd take the night off. Take a good, hard look at what's happening in your life right now." I just stare at her reflective eyes. "I don't know what's going on or what you are doing out there, but I saw the empty car with the headlights in the alley last week, and I didn't bother you about it after you came back inside because, well, I've been in some shit myself at times, and I saw Logan chase you out of here." I look at her surprised. "Yeah, I know him," she says. "Not really well, but I sort of know who he is. I know who he works for anyway. So," she shrugs again, "whatever you've got going on, you probably need a plan." I don't think I have one, I admit. Nothing is working. Stay here, then, she says, standing up. Serve drinks. Waste some time and figure it out. I'll have the guys keep an eye out for Logan, and if he comes in, we'll let you know. I stare at myself in the mirror, because I am that girl staring back, whether I like it or not. Okay, I say. That's what I'll do. Because I cannot be alone tonight. I can't. Not tonight. Not Halloween. Good, she says. But we don't need you tonight. So if you can't take it, just slip out. No one will even notice you're gone. It shouldn't bother me that I'm not needed at Pete's tonight, but it does. It bothers me a lot that no one would miss me if I just went away. I don't know how long I sit there at the dressing table doing nothing. Long enough to be yelled at by several girls who come in and want me to move so they can get ready. But I barely hear them. I'm lost. I'm falling down and there's no one here to catch me. Raven snaps at a few of them, telling them to leave me alone. And I suddenly feel indebted to her in a very big way. Eventually, she comes over, slings my pack over my shoulder, stands me up, and points toward the door. Go, she says. Just go home. I nod, and I leave. But I don't go home. My car drives itself, or so it seems. I end up looking for Cabaret Royale, to find the girls. My name is on the guest list. But after a while I realize I have no idea where it is. I've lived here in this city my whole life. I've seen that sign a million times, but nothing makes sense right now. I text Annie, then Diane, but neither of them answer me. I don't really know what to do. The only thing I do know is that I can't go home tonight. I cannot be alone tonight. So I park on a side street, pull out my angel wings and my halo, put them on, and get out of the car and just stand there in the middle of the street, staring into headlights. The angel says, "Move, Maddie. Get out of the fucking road." But I don't move. I just wonder why she's calling me Maddie instead of Scarlet.
Chapter 15. Tyler. I'm so pissed. I want to drive fast, I want to open this motherfucker up and just rip through the desert night headed nowhere. But I can't, because it's Vegas on Halloween, and everybody and their saggy panty granny is out on the fucking road. This is bullshit, I declare to absolutely no one. It is, though. If I was really the Dark Knight, I wouldn't have to stand for it. I'd have the Batmobile and, like, rocket boosters or whatever. Crap. I should have asked if they could outfit this thing with rocket boosters. You know they can. I saw some crazy shit in the military. They can do all kinds of things. Fuck! I need to get out of this nonsense. I need to leave. Leave Vegas and all this behind. I don't know what I was thinking coming back. I thought somehow it would make things feel better, familiar. But maybe that's the problem. That's what Dr. Eldridge said. I seek the chaos because it feels familiar. And the problem with that is that there's no shortage of chaos to be found in this world. So how's somebody supposed to not seek it out? Cocksucker! I need to fight or fuck. Like right now. I can actually feel the temperature inside my body changing. The fire inside me is burning out of control. Scotty. Son of a bitch! I maneuver my way off this gridlocked bullshit of a main road by driving up onto the sidewalk. Maybe the cops will come after me and we can get into a high-speed chase. That'd be something. I look left, I look right. No cops. Damn. I snake around some more cars and onto a side street that's a little more open, but now, suddenly, I hear car horns blaring. Not the woo-hoo, it's party time kind, but more the, hey, get the fuck out of the way kind. And now, squinting up ahead, I see that some asshole is standing in the middle of the road. Jesus Christ! Fucking people! Everybody in the world is an asshole. And I'm not excluding myself from that indictment. Hell, I'm the biggest asshole of them all, but fuck everyone else, because they're not me. As I get closer, I can see it's not a guy asshole, it's a girl asshole, who are the worst kind of assholes, because you can't punch a girl for being an asshole. Well,
I suppose you maybe could, but it's really, really uncool and the kind of thing I tend to frown on. In fact, one of my favorite things to do is punch assholes who've laid their hands on women in a less than civil way, even if the woman was being an asshole. Yeah, fuck those assholes. Fuck those women hurting assholes right in their assholes, fucking assholes. As I'm having this elevated discourse with myself, the woman asshole who's standing in the middle of the road comes into clearer view. Are you fucking kidding me? She's not an asshole. She's Scarlet. She's my angel. In the middle of the road. Like an asshole. Cars weaving around her, people yelling, what the hell is she doing? More importantly, what is she doing here? And suddenly it occurs to me that I've never seen her away from the strip club. But here she is now, in full angel regalia, in the middle of the road. And I start to think, is she a real angel? Maybe she is. Maybe we think of angels as chaste and pure and shit because that's what all the myths tell us, but maybe they're just crazy little fuck machines. And that's what makes them angelic. Holy shit, I've just discovered a secret about heaven. Angels exist to fuck good into the world. Okay, so that last car just almost hit her. This is not cool. She's not even moving. I guess that it's okay because she's got divine protection or something. But I don't like the way this thing looks like it's playing out. So I do something that makes complete sense and is 100% the right thing to do. I spin my car hard left, fishtailing it right, and block the oncoming traffic from possibly running my paragon of sexiness over. I jump out and shout to her over the roof. Scarlet? Ford? Some asshole is now laying on his horn at me.
Hey, asshole! What the fuck are you doing? Get the fuck out of the road!
The asshole shouts. Me? I'm the asshole? Fuck you, asshole! I can't believe this dickhead, who I just decided is not an asshole, but a dickhead. Fucking dickhead. Dickhead now decides it's a smooth move to get out of his Camaro and step to me. He's big, and he's dressed like a Viking. Great. Now I gotta fight a fucking Viking. But then I find myself very excited at the possibility that I might get to fight and fuck tonight. My angel. She's like a good luck charm. Ford? Scarlet says again as she gets closer. What are you? Look out! And at that, I turn just in time to see Dickhead's fist the moment before it makes contact with my jaw and rings my bell. Pretty damn hard. So, two things about me. One, this guy is most definitely a dickhead because I would never, ever in a million years take a sucker shot at someone. No way. There's nothing worse in my book than rolling up on someone unaware. You look a man in the eye before you try to tune him up. And two, I can take a fucking punch. I twist my neck to crack it after the unexpected shock to the system it just took, and then I turn my head back to look at Dickhead in his dickhead eyes. Get back in your car now, please, I say, in as polite a tone as I can muster. Dickhead stares me down like he thinks he's going to try again. There's a moment where I consider grabbing the gun that's still in my glove box and really giving the old boy a Halloween scare, but that feels too easy. Plus, and I have to be honest about this, I want Scarlet to think I'm cool. I mean, I am super fucking cool. Everybody says so. But I want her to think I am. Pretty please, I say. Or you and I can decide to learn a lot about each other real fucking fast here in the middle of this goddamn road. Your call, chief. I assume it annoys other people as much as it annoys me, so I decide to drop it on him. Dickhead looks at me. Then he looks over my shoulder at Scarlet. I hazard a glance back at her. She's got a smug look on her face that I'm choosing to interpret as pride because she knows she's rolling in the company of awesomeness. Then Dickhead backs up, points his finger at me. Ugh, so fucking cheesy. Gets in his bitchin' Camaro, bumping his Viking horns on the doorframe as he tries to sit down. Classic. And throws it in reverse. He's sort of boxed in, but eh, fuck him. Hey, Scarlet says. I turn to her. She's standing by the hood on the passenger side. What are you doing here?
she asks. Me? I'm just driving down the fucking street. What are you doing here?
Standing in the fucking street?
Yeah, I caught that. Why?
I don't know. Because I'm having a real bad night.
Her eyes go soft and sad.
I wonder why she's having a bad night.
I wonder if it's as bad as the bad night I'm having.
I wonder if I can help.
So I ask, is there anything I can do?
She shakes her head a little.
Then she pauses and says,
I don't know. Maybe.
Okay. I mean, yeah, name it. She takes a breath, and I could be wrong. It could just be the way the evening lights are hitting her, but she looks a little like she wants to start crying. Then she asks, will you fuck me?
There are times in your life when you forget how to breathe.
This is one.
I nod.
Fuck yeah, I will. I hit the button to unlock her door and she slides into the passenger seat. Her white dress has some dirt on it, and her crooked halo and tattered wings make her look like she was kicked out of eternity and got lost in the muck trying to find her way home. I slide into the driver's seat and close the door. I reach over and touch her chin, turn her head to face me.
I begin. Are you okay?
She smiles the tiniest of smiles.
No, I'm not.
I nod a bit.
Yeah, me either.
And now my tongue is in her mouth. I've got my hands behind her head and her hands are reaching for my cock. We are urgent, angry, and needy. She is a fallen angel, and I am sin itself. I rip myself away and ask, is your place close?
Not really, she says.
Cool, mine is. I slam on the accelerator, straighten the car out, and start hooking back around to the strip as fast as I can without killing us both in the process. Fuck! I should have got the rocket boosters.
Chapter 16. Maddie. There is a right way to do everything. Like get through Halloween, for instance. I've done it 6 times before tonight, so I should know better than to get in this car, grab this guy's cock, and let him take me back to his place. I should know better, because for me, Halloween has nothing to do with feigned fright over stupid costumes. It's got everything to do with the very real horror of how my brother died. Since then, Halloween has required the distraction of strangers. Many strangers, preferably in the mood to do things they'd rather forget tomorrow. And alcohol. Copious amounts of alcohol. But the key word here is strangers. Not a guy I've already been with. Not this guy who seems to show up every goddamned time I need saving. I am, however, a pragmatist. My options are pretty limited at this point. Most of the cars in the road just wanted to run me over and shout nasty names at me. None but this one came with an offer of solitude with a stranger. Almost stranger. But that's all I've got, so it's gonna have to do. Besides, I don't even know his real name, so that sort of counts. Like I said, pragmatist. Ford is swinging the car around corners in a desperate attempt to get back onto the strip. So I go sideways a little, pushing up against the passenger door, and my hand slips off his cock. He looks down at the hard bulge in his pants where my hand was, then glances up at me and says, "Put it back." It's not even a request, so I just do as I'm told and grab him again and close my eyes as we hook around another corner, wheels screeching, enjoying the ride, reliving the way he fucked me in the alley last weekend. Fantasizing how he'll fuck me tonight. We stop at a red light, his leg bouncing in anticipation, or maybe irritation that we are no longer moving. But then the car in front of us turns right and he slams on the accelerator, and we sail across 3 lanes, oncoming cars blaring their horns when we cut them off, and then slide into an underground garage entrance, which brings us back up to street level, where he breaks in front of a frightened valet in fancy valet garb. He's out of the car, shoving bills into the valet's hand, and 2 seconds later he's pulling my door open and grabbing my hand.
"Come," he says, pulling me out of the seat.
Everything about right now is urgent and happens in fast forward. His hand on my ass as we pass through the front doors, his quick steps as he leads me over to the elevator, the flash of his key card to open the doors, stepping inside. Another key card flash as he pushes the button for the penthouse, then walking me backwards, his hard body pressed to mine as I hit the back wall and the doors close. Our lips press into each other, tongues twisting inside mouths, fast breathing and rapid heartbeats. I grab his cock again, just as his fingertips find my pussy. He bites my lip, his other hand sliding up to my throat, fingers pressing against my windpipe. I swallow hard and feel his smile.
"Do you like that?"
he growls. I close my eyes because the answer is yes, but I say, "Shut up and fuck me." His fingers find their way inside my panties and then inside me. I slump against the back wall of the elevator and enjoy it, acutely aware that somewhere, someone is probably watching us on a security camera, but not caring. I am wet, and I just want more.
"Scarlet,"
he whispers as he takes his urgent kisses to my neck, his hand still pressing into my throat.
"If you don't tell me what you like, I'm gonna do whatever I want."
I open my eyes to stare into his, just as the elevator doors ding our arrival at the penthouse and say, "I want someone to sin with me tonight. That's all I need." He smiles the smile of a demon on his home turf.
"I might take you to hell and back, Angel."
The doors open to the lights of Sin City itself, flashing red and orange and yellow around the outline of his face. I place both hands firmly on his chest and push him, making him step backwards as we enter his apartment. "So, what are you waiting for?"
Chapter 17. Tyler and Maddie. I stumble in through the door, grabbing her around the waist and pulling her along with me as I kiss and bite, licking along her long, arching neck. "You just move in?" she asks. She is, I'm assuming, making a commentary on the Spartan way I have the apartment furnished, but I'm not real keen on having a conversation about home decorating just now. "Shut up," I say, as I reach behind her to push the door closed, pulling my hand back to her as quickly as I can so that I don't have to be apart from her body any longer than necessary. I lift at the back of her little dress thing, slap both hands on her ass, nearly coming in my pants when she squeals, and pull her to me tightly as I keep walking her backwards into the main room. The vampire in me is out again in full force, biting her bottom lip as I kiss her, almost pulling her along with my teeth just as much as I am with the rest of my body. She rips her mouth free from mine, and I draw a little blood as she goes. She pauses for a nanosecond to touch her lip. She smiles when she sees the red on her fingertip, places her finger in her mouth, sucks the blood off, and grabs my dick hard, hammering us backwards into the glass of the windows. She's the one who's biting now. Biting my neck, biting my chin. She bites my cheek. "Ah, fuck," I exclaim. Not in discomfort, not in pain. In joy, in exaltation, in affirmation, in relief. Because we are fire. We are combustion. We are the raging inferno of purifying flame that will singe away all our pain and leave us barren and ready to begin again. In the punishing passion that we share, we can torture away whatever nightmares plague us both and wake born anew. We are each other's suicide. She smiles and slaps my cheek where she just bit me, and I smile back. She grabs my shirt with both hands and rips it open. Buttons pop and fly off, skittering across the floor. "This is like my only button-down shirt," I note. "Shut the fuck up," she says with a shake of her head that I am now seeing the top of as she begins licking my scars.
She's tracing each line, each crevice, each mutilated and broken ridge of my marred flesh. The whole time she's reaching inside the zipper of my jeans to work my cock with her strong, delicate fingers. She's still wearing the wings and the halo, and if the view from here is the last one I ever see, I'll feel like a lucky son of a bitch for the first time in my life. She's tracing the one long scar, the one that runs vertically down my stomach to just right above my cock with her tongue. When she gets to where the button of my jeans is still snapped shut, she wraps her mouth around it and I swear to fuck, I don't know how, I've never seen a woman do this before, pops it open. David Copperfield isn't the only magician on the strip tonight. She pulls down my pants, or rips down is more accurate, to my ankles, glances up at me with those green, green eyes, and then wraps her gorgeous mouth around my cock. My head throws itself back, slamming against the glass, and I am reminded that we are exposed to the city below in the glaring light of my apartment as it bounces off the steel and wood and glass, leaving us vulnerable to gawking eyes if they so choose to notice us. And I get even harder. I recognize now that I want people to see. I want them to be made uncomfortable at the sight of my happiness. Because fuck them all. She's twisting her head and neck at the same time she slides her mouth back and forth on my hard cock, causing it to bend and throb and tense and ache. I want to fuck her so bad I can't understand it. I reach down to touch her head so that I can help her. Not that she needs it, but I want to guide her as she swallows the whole of my shaft. I want to fist her hair and demand she do what I want even though she already wants it herself. And as I extend my hand, I remember that she's still wearing a wig. And I realize that I've never seen her hair. I've never seen who is really underneath the halo. And the suspense has me hyperventilating. So I first pull the halo off, tossing it to the side as she continues to stroke me with her tongue. Fuck, Angel, please slow down. I don't want to come before I've split you open. I can feel her smile spread around my tip as she pulls back slightly to tickle the edge of my dick with her tongue. Holy fucking shit. And now I grab the wig the same way she grabbed at my shirt, but I don't rip it away. I slide it carefully off the back of her head so I don't hurt her. And I see red. A bottled sea of red roiling on top of her head as the artifice is slowly stripped away. And suddenly all I can see is the wash of flaming red bobbing back and forth while she drives me insane. I was right. It is her. She really is my angel. From my dream. Oh my God. It's her. She's real.
My fingernails dig into the flesh of his legs and he goes still. For a moment, I think this is it. He's gonna fist my hair, push my head into his groin until his balls are pressing against my chin and come down my throat. And even though I've convinced myself that I'm not the kind of girl who does that for men I don't know, I am. For him. Just him. Only him. All the time. Whenever he wants. Whatever he wants. I want to be his dirty little slut. When I realize none of that is happening, I tip my head up and stare at his wide eyes, pull back and let his cock fall from my mouth. What? His fingers go to my hair and he starts opening the clips that kept it tucked up inside my wig. Long strands of fire-red tresses fall against my cheeks, and then the whole thing comes apart as he slides the hairband off, and it turns into an unruly mess of flames that falls down my shoulders like a river of lava.
"It's you," he says.
"Yeah," I say back. "It's me, the devil in disguise." I grab his cock, squeezing hard but pumping slow as I kiss his tip, and swipe my tongue around his head until he squints his eyes, like he wants to close them so badly and go back to the desperate sex we were about to have. But he can't. He bends down instead, his back sliding against the window, both hands firmly on my cheeks until he's boxing me in with his knees, and we're eye to eye, and his intense gaze feels like he's staring into my filthy fucking soul, and he says, "I know you." And for a moment I want to say, "You know absolutely nothing about me,"